This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, Jen, what up, Jen?
Hey.
What up?
Hey, we're up to the sixth day, or the sixth nightmare before Christmas. It's number six. Today's six.
Six.
Did I say it's six?
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Six.
Yeah. Seven, eight, that's nine. It. What's six? Is the magic number. Six, six,
and
six,
this, six. This one is a doozy.
They're all doozies.
Big. This one's a big, this one's a doozy. This one is shocking.
They're all
just
shocking.
They're the...
All. Crazy. Well, I cannot wait. Hit me with it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it. Let's go.
Okay.
Let's dive right in.
What do you think is like one of the number one requests at Christmas time for kids or adults? What do you think they like
a toy or
to ask for?
Oh, for
what do you think? What genre? What kind of, like, when you go to Amazon or a store or for Black Friday, what has the biggest sales?
TV?
What's the big
like
draw?
TVs? Electronics?
Tech. Technologies.
Yeah, tech. Yeah.
Electronics, right?
Yeah.
This is about an electronic.
Oh.
These deaths. It happened in Florida, so everybody's now going,
Yeah.
And also, I want to just do a quick shout out to Lana McCall, because she's the one that did all the writing and the research on this. Mm-hmm. And I am just happily regurgitating what she wrote. And she did a fine job. This would have given me nightmares. Before we start, big shout out to Lana McCall. She's the one that did all the writing and research for this. I'm just regurgitating what she wrote.
Yay!
And believe me, it's going to make you want to regurgitate because it's sickening. It's disgusting.
What is wrong with people? Never mind. I know. Go ahead.
We're going to talk about a scene. So a big FYI, this is a scene so brutal and so bloody that pictures of the scene mm-hmm. have been barred from being shown outside the courtroom.
Oh my God.
Imagine the worst crime scene photo you've ever seen.
Well, I hope I haven't seen that many, but I could be wrong.
I'm
just saying.
It's probably 1,000 times worse.
Ugh. Okay. Let's hear it. You got me.
All right.
You got me interested.
So there are 6 people we're going to speak about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The victims,
mm-hmm.
including a poor little dachshund by the name of George.
Aw, George.
Mm-hmm. And the victims are Aaron Belanger, who was 22, Roberto Tito Gonzalez, who was 28. I'm sorry for I don't have the control of the English language, much less Spanish. Francisco Flaco Ayo Roman, 30 years old. Jonathan W. Gleason, who was 17. Michelle Ann Nathan, who was 19. And Anthony Vega, who was 34. And of course, George the Dachshund. Those are the victims.
Hmm.
Aaron was dating Tito and Michelle was dating Nathan. They all 4 lived together in Deltona, Florida, which was only 2 miles away from their mutual job at Burger King. They all worked together, too. Could you imagine working and living together? We'd
no.
kill each other.
No. Nope.
We would.
Well, we did work together, and we had some pretty grand
issues?
Stories, but we also had some issues. Yes, we did.
Yeah. Aaron and Tito had just moved to Deltona from Massachusetts. They figured warmer weather meant better job opportunities. As an added bonus, Aaron's grandparents just lived 4 miles west of her on Providence Boulevard during the winter. They were snowbirds, of course. The rest of the year, during the summer, the grandparents went back to their house in Maine. Now, I mentioned the grandparents' house on Providence Boulevard because this house is pretty much where this all started.
Hmm.
While Aaron's grandparents were staying in Maine that summer, she was responsible for their home. Easy job, you know, she would go in, make sure everything was okay, she'd check it. Easy, right? Well, one day, on July 29th, she went to take a little swim at grandparents' house, and she noticed that there were some people living in her grandparents' house.
Oh.
So she called the police. Now, the police showed up, took note, you know, wrote everything down that they saw, had her clean everything out of the house. There was bags of crap that was there, clothes, an Xbox, some...
They were squatting. They were squatters.
They were squatting. Okay. Yeah, they were okay. Squatters.
But they brought an Xbox and clothes?
They were living there, so they brought everything they own to live in her grandparents' house.
That's so creepy.
So when the police left, you know, she's like, what am I supposed to do with all this stuff? And she's like, do whatever you want. Sell it, give it away, throw it away. We don't care. But unfortunately for Aaron, she had no idea who these belongings belonged to. Mm-hmm. Little did she know that those messy people living in her grandmother's house were 27-year-old Troy Victorino and 18-year-old Jerome Hunter. Now, somehow, Troy and Jerome knew it was Aaron's grandmother. From one news story that I read, they implied that it was Aaron's cousin that let Troy and Jerome in. But like I said, that I have not researched that, so don't.
But they kind of had a connection somewhere in there, right?
They
like
had
somebody
a connection,
knew something.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Because you wouldn't just stumble upon a house. You would have to know that
right,
people
and then decide
gone
to live
while,
in.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Right. But from what I had seen, it was some relation to Aaron had said that it was okay or kind of gave them permission or said that the grandparents' house were open, something like that.
Right.
The next morning around 1 a.m. on August the 1st, a group of men and women show up at Aaron's house. Now, the women had knives, and the men had aluminum baseball bats, which they had purchased from a grocery store days before. Panicking and cowering on the floor in her bedroom, Aaron called 911. She was hiding from this group of women that was screaming at her, you know? They were going, where are you? Where is she? Where is she?
That's so creepy. You know? That's like the movie Strangers, The Strangers. Ooh, creepy.
Oh, I would totally lose everything in my bowels. Seriously. I mean, I couldn't.
TMI, Jen. TMI.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
And I'm sure you would too, right? Aaron's hiding from this group of women and she tells the police, you know, I have people here and they won't leave. They're just yelling, where is she? Where is she? And from the call, you can hear that she's nervous. I mean, she's upset. And she just said that she and her boyfriend were just hanging out with some friends, having a few beers when this group came to their door. Now, her boyfriend Flacco tried to calm these women down, and it wasn't working. So the women keep yelling, and Aaron turns on her fan to muffle the sounds of her talking with the police because she's terrified of what they'll do to her if they find out that she called them, right? She starts explaining to the dispatcher that she thinks she knows who these people that are threatening her are. She says, you know, I don't want problems. All I want to do is get these people out. They have been living in my Nana's house and they're mad at me for getting them out. Please help. I need help. So the police come up to her house and she hangs up when the police get there. The group that's at the door, the mob that's at Aaron's door, disperse once the police came. So later on, around 3:45, their group comes back. Flacco goes out to greet them and says that there's nobody there that these people want, you know, and all they want to do is they just want to sleep. Please leave. All of a sudden, a man rushes into the house, into Aaron's room, and starts cursing at her. And he starts screaming at her, what's she going to do, you know, and asking her, just say, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Can you imagine being woken up and just some man screaming at you?
That's like harassment big time.
So she calls the police again. And she tells them how scared she is. And she's like, you know what? We can't even sleep in our own house. You know, what can I do? What can I do? Volusia County Sheriff's deputies say that because Troy Victorino's name never comes up, that they did what they could do. You know, if somebody would have mentioned that, you know what? We think it's Troy's behind this. They could have done something. But because nobody ever said it was Troy, they couldn't do a thing.
Right. Let me add, I think that you're saying his name very, very nicely, Jen.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm sure it should be Troy Victorino.
No, that's
something like that.
Mine has some Hispanic names in it, too, and I'm just going to do the best I can.
I want to make sure that everybody knows this. Troy was also there during all this mess, but he kind of hung back. He was, like, standing by the cars. He wasn't in the front row. He was just kind of hanging back, or at least that's what it sounds like here. After leaving Aaron's house, Troy called the police himself to report that his items were stolen from the house that he was squatting in. That sounds good, right? That's like calling to say, my marijuana got stolen.
Somebody took my coke. Somebody stole my coke. Yeah.
Exactly. And Troy got very upset when they advised him that he would need to make a list of all the stolen property, to which he said, I'll take care of this myself.
Oh.
Now, this is when the planning started. He pulled together a group of guys. Himself, Jerome Hunter, the friend that was staying with him at Aaron's grandmother's house. Robert Cannon, whom Jerome had only met 2 months prior, and Michael Salas, whom had known Jerome from school and had been friends with Robert for only a short time. During the planning, Troy described a movie he recently saw called Wonderland, where a group that has lead pipes runs into a house and beats the occupants to death.
Ugh.
He said he wanted to do the same thing at Aaron's house. Now, Troy figured that Jerome had to be down with this plan because, you know, some of this property that was stolen, or I'm sorry, allegedly stolen, was his. So that makes sense. And the others were probably just doing it from fear because Troy was huge and he was a badass man. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean badass as in cool badass. I mean badass as in just nasty man.
Not a nice person.
Not. Troy said that he particularly wanted to kill Flacco and then told the group, you gotta beat the bitches bad. Those were quotes, by the way.
Hmm.
Around midnight on August 5th, just days after Aaron placed a 911 call pleading for help, Troy, Jerome, Robert, and Michael show up at her house armed with aluminum baseball bats. When Jerome entered the house, he saw a white male in a recliner in the living room watching TV, and Jerome hit him with the bat. He couldn't remember how many times he hit him. He just remembers swinging the bat. He said he remembers hitting him more than 3, but less than 12. Jerome also struck Roberto Gonzalez, who was in the back bedroom, and he kept hitting him with a bat. Roberto had been struck around 20 to 30 times, and Jerome described just continuously swinging the bat, unsure of where it was landing. He claimed that he was just there to get his stuff back, and none of the killing was supposed to happen. Big old dirty liar on this one, too, you know.
Oh.
Lots of big old dirty liars.
Yep. Hey, buddy, your pants are on fire.
Mm-hmm. The details on the timeline are kind of slim for everything, but everyone in the house died.
Ugh.
They were all bludgeoned with a baseball bat.
All killings are senseless, but seriously, this is like, what? Mm-hmm. There's no... Because you're angry that you squatted in this house and they caught you?
And
you should be happy,
they took
buddy,
your stuff.
And just move on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Really so stealing, though, when you stole somebody's house to live in? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Around 6:30 in the morning on August 6, 2004, a coworker of the victims arrived at the house, and he found the bodies. He immediately called 911. Now, I can't even imagine doing that, as brutal as it was. When officers arrived, they found various victims in various rooms. In the back right master bedroom, Aaron, Flacco, and the dog George were together. In the
and
living
why
room,
kill the dog? Seriously. How many times do we
witness,
have to...
I guess.
What? He can't talk. It's not the Shaggy DA, for goodness sake. That's a reference for all you people back in the old days. Let me know if you get that. Okay, go ahead. Fred McMurphy. Love him. Go ahead.
Jonathan and Anthony, their bodies lay in the living room. Michelle was alone in the front left bedroom, and Roberto was in the doorway of the back left bedroom. Everyone in the household was beaten. They all had knife wounds inflicted post-mortem, and the cause of death was determined to be blunt force trauma to the head, consistent with being caused by a cylindrical object such as what?
a bat.
Yeah, a baseball bat. Thank you, Camille. You did very good.
Thanks. I can spell it, too. B-A-T.
Erin suffered more than any of the others. Not only was she beaten with a baseball bat and stabbed with knives, she also sustained a post-mortem laceration from her vagina up to the abdominal cavity of her body.
Ugh.
It was found to be consistent with being inflicted via baseball bat.
What?
They raped her with a baseball bat.
Oh my God. Sick, sick
fuckers.
Puppies.
Postmortem.
Oh my
Postmortem.
God.
So it was all out of anger. They were angry at her. The medical examiner also found that most had defensive wounds. They had fought for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But the autopsies weren't the only evidence of what happened that night. The house was also a huge forensic puzzle within itself. The front door had been kicked in with such force that it broke the deadbolt and left a foot imprint on the door.
Were they on drugs, like, to get that extra power?
That I'm aware of.
Okay. Mm-mm. Okay.
They were just pissed. Troy was like 6'5", 300 pounds.
Okay. You should have led with that. He's huge. Of course he could break
the
door.
He is huge. The footprint was approximately 13 inches in length and consistent with lug boots. That who owned? Troy. A trail of blood from the front left bedroom to the living room indicated that Anthony had been dragged. There were also footwear impressions on two playing cards, a bedsheet, and a pay stub, all matching Troy's lug's boots.
What an idiot.
Police also found a knife handle and a bloody knife blade at the scene. So the next day, police arrested Troy on a probation violation at a house on Fort Smith Boulevard. And Jerome, of course, was with him. Jerome came into the station voluntarily for an interview, and he said he had been living with Troy and that he had gone to Aaron's house with Troy on the night of the murder for the purpose of getting his stuff back, only for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
On August 8th, Michael Salas was interviewed, and though he initially denied any involvement in the crimes, he later cracked and described how he murdered Roberto Gonzalez. Michael said that he hit Roberto in the back bedroom with a baseball bat in the leg, arm, and back 3 to 4 times, and that was the only person he struck. He denied hitting anyone in the head. The police interviewing Michael said his demeanor seemed unconcerned and deadpan. He described how he got rid of the clothing he was wearing and how he had to change of clothing with him on the night of the murder. More important than anything, he told the investigator where to find the baseball bats, the one he helped wipe blood off after bludgeoning the entire household to death. They were in a retention pond. Well, two were, and two others were found in surrounding trees, which was lucky because the one that were found in the trees still had blood and hair on them.
Did they, like, toss them up in the air and they landed in trees, or did they, like, hide them in a tree?
No, they tossed them from the road. Two of them went in the water, so the water completely cleared them, but the ones that were found in the trees still had DNA on them.
What idiots. Seriously. Everybody knows you don't toss a weapon out the window. You don't do that. You don't.
That's why they were caught so quickly.
Good.
So Jerome, Troy, Robert, and Michael were all charged on August 27th, 2004 with 14 charges. One count conspiracy to commit aggravated battery, murder, armed burglary of a dwelling, tampering with physical evidence, 6 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of abuse of a dead human body with a weapon, 1 count of armed burglary of a dwelling, and 1 count cruelty to animals. I'm glad George is getting his say in all this, too.
George. George was the only nice part of any of this.
Well, no, he's dead. It's not nice that he was bludgeoned by a baseball bat.
No, the nice, like, I like that they, you know what
they
I'm saying?
They added
like,
that, like, yes.
Yes, that they included
just to throw
George
it on.
In there. Because that makes you realize how evil and depraved these people are.
The trial for these men would start on July 5th, 2006. Robert Cannon struck a deal that in return for pleading guilty on all counts in the indictment, he would receive a life sentence and testify against the other three. During the trial, when Robert was asked if he knew what was going to happen when he drove Troy to the house, if he knew that he was, you know, the intent was to kill everyone in the house, he said, quote, "That may have been in Troy's mind, but it was not in mine." And he also said that me and Michael were in fear for our lives and we had no choice. We had to go with him because he would have killed me and Michael, which I'm sure he would have.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So because of this plea deal, Jerome, Troy, and Michael were all tried together. Now, Troy testified in his own defense, which is never a good idea. And he said, you know, yeah, he believed that Aaron did steal his stuff, but he also denied murdering anybody. He said that he was at home and at work. And then he said he went to a nightclub on that night, right? Which was not a lie. It was true. He went after he killed everybody. After. Can you believe that? He just bludgeoned six people and he goes out to a nightclub.
That's a true psychopath. Honestly.
Unreal. Unreal. He also tried to lie his way out of it, of course, but the evidence was that he was in Aaron's house. There was no denying it. It was his boots that they found.
Not to mention prints. Him and his little buddies were there stalking and tormenting and taunting them. I mean, what a ding dong.
Yeah. And also, he tried to make his alibi stick. He had two friends testify on his behalf where he was, but it didn't work out. I couldn't even imagine lying for somebody like that, going to trial and knowingly lie. I'd be scared to death that they'd find out and I'd be in prison. And I wouldn't last in prison. I really wouldn't. I'm too pretty.
Too pretty, Jen. Too pretty, Jen.
I know.
Too pretty. Me too, girl. Me too.
So the jury sentenced Troy to death. Thank God. And the other two, Michael and Anthony, they got life without the possibility of parole. Now, that didn't stop Troy, because on September 21st, 2006, they imposed four death sentences on Troy due to the six aggravating factors. And he has attempted, in the meantime, every time, to appeal it. But each time, it doesn't work. Mm. He doesn't get his appeal. Now, I'm just going to go.
Shocked, I know. I tell you.
I know. This whole thing came down to Troy, right? And let me tell you about him. Troy, like I said before, he was 6'5", and he weighed 275 pounds, 27 years old. He's huge. He's a big guy. He's an anger problem. He's got a past record.
Obvi.
And he has quite the reputation. Now, it is said that he allegedly was a member of the gang, the Latin Kings. Now, he's not just a member. Allegedly a member. He also was allegedly an officer of the gang.
It's like allegedly. The hair men for club. I'm not just a president. I'm a member. I think that the hair club. I think that might be a St. Louis thing. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'm not for sure either.
Yeah. Hans Wyman. I'm not just a president. I'm a member too.
Troy's also known for getting his money by distributing cocaine, heroin, and marijuana on the street. And as you know, I'm pretty sure the reason why he got those men to be his alibi is I'm sure that they were gang members, but allegedly they were gang members, but who knows?
What do you think? The gang's going to sue you, Jen? We have no money. Bring it on, gang. Bring it on.
I got a lot of Hot Wheels. There's no proof that he was even in the gang, so there's no proof that the gang members actually testified for him as his alibi. But, you know, I'm just saying that maybe gang brothers pretty much have a strong bond. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but they have to, too. It's like part of their thing. Comes before all else, let me tell you.
Now, Troy has a big, big...
Schlong?
Big criminal record. More than the other three men that stood trial for these murders. Seems he just had an average IQ. He was just normally smart, not anything crazy, but I'm pretty sure he had street smarts. He was born on December 11th, 1976, and he had a pretty rough childhood. I mean, he was physically and sexually and emotionally abused by his father as a child. And it's at least his mother and father, that's what they testified in court. And he was once married, but in 98, that... he wasn't married anymore. And this is what Lana put, and I think it's really funny. She put, my thought is probably because he was a fucking lunatic asshole, which made me laugh.
And he is.
Crazy. Yep. He is. Uh-huh.
I'm going to say yes.
Uh-huh. He grew up in Jamaica, New York, which is just a suburbs of Queen, and he's the oldest of six siblings. And he didn't really have any friends. When anybody asked him who his friends were, he would say it was his siblings. At age 9, he was sent to a psychiatric facility due to concerns over suicidal thoughts. At that point, he was diagnosed with manic depressive disorder, and he was kept there involuntarily for a month. And he would later say that it was a very traumatic experience and one that made him feel abandoned by his mother, which is sad, but it was probably terrible. For the best. He probably should have been there longer. In 1987, his mother moved the family without his father, thank God, to Deltona, Florida. And because of the lack of funds, the mother was just able to buy a starter home that needed to be fixed up. He also had an alcohol abuse problem. And at the time of the murders, he was on probation from a previous arrest. It seems that he was arrested on July 29th on a felony battery charge. He was accused of punching a man over a car debt. Now, if you are following along with the story, all of this happened at the very end of July, beginning of August. He was arrested on July 29th on a felony battery charge. Now, if you're paying attention, the first night he started harassing Aaron was on August 5th, that same year. Now, he was on probation, right? And he had been seeing his probation officer. And his probation officer actually should have arrested him right then and there, but he didn't. And if he would have arrested him, these six people would have been saved. And it's very from CBS.com or CBSNews.com. It said that since his release from prison in 2002, this was prior to the murders, he was arrested on battery and grand theft charges. Victorino, 27, has been accused of battery, a hit and run, and making harassing phone calls, yet each time he managed to stay out of jail. So he should have been
caught. I wonder
caught.
If he was a good talker, too. You know what I mean? Like, he would...
Maybe, but he's 6'5", and he's 300 pounds, so he could have just been really intimidating. And the guy, the probation officer, didn't want to arrest him for fear of his own life, right? But because
he went and killed somebody over, he was angry that he got caught squatting in somebody's house. Like, yeah, right. That's nothing compared to getting arrested because you violated parole. I don't blame him for that.
Ugh. Well, but it's another thing to know is that since the probation officer didn't didn't do what he was supposed to do, he did get fired along with three other supervisors. So, and I'll tell you a little bit about Jerome Hunter. He's interesting past, too. He was born on May 21st, 1986, and he had just turned 18 when this all happened, the whole murdering those people, or not those people, but he had just turned 18 when he decided to help Troy murder the six plus the dog. According to the court psychologist, he was in the early stages of schizophrenia. And people describe Jerome, as they describe most serial killers, as keeping to himself. But he always did like to talk to his twin brother, which normally wouldn't be a problem, except this twin brother was dead.
Signs, Jen. There's signs. There's always signs. And yet people don't see it, but you know.
Yep. Growing up, Jerome witnessed his father physically abuse his mother. And when his older brother moved out, Jerome felt abandoned. Psychologists say that because of Jerome's mental condition, that he would have been a follower of Troy's rather than being the leader of the whole murder. I mean, he only really knew Troy a few days before they started squatting in the houses together.
Right.
So I'm sure Troy seeked him out to be a follower. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like Charlie Manson. Those guys might not be the brightest bulb in the pack, if you will, but they can hone in on who is going to be a follower and do what they say.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, totally.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But anyway, that's all about this Xbox murders. And if I can, I know they say it's the Xbox murder, but I honestly do not believe it had anything really to do with the Xbox. But did they want the Xbox back? Yeah, I think they did. But I think more so the fact they were mad at Aaron. Aaron kind of got the best of him. They had a place to live and Aaron called them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'll be damned if some woman was going to get the best of Troy.
Yeah, no. And a big macho guy like that, no way.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. No, I'd agree with that. That's not, that had nothing to do with it, really. Sadly.
No. That might have been kind of like the catalyst that kind of pissed him off.
Yeah.
But then when he threatened her and tried to get it back and did this whole scare tactic and she wouldn't do anything about it, that's when it pissed him off.
But who would? I would be sitting there thinking, there are a bunch of lunatics outside. Yeah. There's no reason to that, you know?
Yeah, and like, she did. She gave all the stuff away. It's not like she tried to sell it or anything. She just gave it away. She didn't keep it for herself.
Plus, the police told her to do that.
Exactly.
Not that it's their fault. It's the crazy lunatics outside. That's their fault.
Right.
Anyway, okay, Jen. Good job. Great job.
Good job, Lana. Yeah. Just horrible. But I feel so badly for her father. I watched a documentary or like a little TV show on it, and I'll put the show in the links. But her father has this horrible guilt because he's the one that talked her and her boyfriend Flacco into going down to Florida to start a new life together because it would be safe.
As a parent, though, you think that's good. Here's a good opportunity. You're young. Your
grandparents are near. So if you have problems or if you need anything, they can help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, just heart.
It's not his fault.
Horrible. No. Anyway, that's it. Thank you.
All right, Jen. That concludes day 6.
Woo! 7. Tomorrow, woo! 7. You got 7.
Tomorrow, 7. All right. Stay tuned for tomorrow night. This is all of this. Let's just give a little golf clap to Nico.
Nico
and
woo!
Lana for making all this happen.
Nico and Lana. Yay!
So I'll see you later, Jen. And
hold on. Before we sign out, I just want to let everybody know that they have no idea what we put Nico through every week. No idea whatsoever.
Poor Nico. One of us is worse than the other, but I'm going to let other
people admit,
decide.
I will admit that I'm worse. Never pass the buck. I am worse, but I don't think things through, and I touch things I shouldn't touch, and I do things that I shouldn't do.
Don't touch the shiny thing.
I know. Yeah. Just don't think. But
you break it, you buy it, Jen. You break it, you buy it. Sadly, you buy it a lot.
I know. I'm going to petition the Roman Catholic Church to see if I can get Nico canonized. So I'll have a petition
Saint
going
Nico.
Around. You all can sign it. Mm-hmm.
I agree with that.
Saint Nico. Saint of audio and tech.
That's funny. All right, Jen. All right. So remember, people out there, 6 days in, Christmas is coming. You're going to need all the power. You're going to need the positive vibes to deal with family that you don't really care for.
Right.
And then some of you love to pieces. So whatever. Right. But
Let us do the murder for you. Let us do the murdering for you. Mm-hmm.
So on that note, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Today's episode was researched and written by Lana McCall. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at wetalkofdreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya.